Pleased to welcome to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here on News Talk 710 KNUS in his final weeks, just a couple more left as Attorney General of the State of Colorado. Very pleased to welcome to News Talk 710 KNUS, John Southers, who joins us now. Southers, Mr. Southers, welcome to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. It's good to have you here.
Jimmy, thanks for having me.
Merry Christmas to you. Before we get to sort of looking back at the last 10 years and especially some of the things that have happened in the last year that I want to ask you about, what have you got going on this Christmas?
Well, we're not doing a lot. We're not traveling. We did some traveling earlier in the fall. I have a daughter in Denver who's a deputy district attorney who will be spending some time with us, our other daughter. And her husband are in Djibouti, Africa. She's a lieutenant commander in the Navy Reserve, and she's stationed there or assigned there for a year. She's been there 6 months, has 6 months to go. And then, of course, as you know, I'm beginning to put together a campaign for mayor of Colorado Springs. So that's my Christmas.
We will definitely be talking about that in a little while here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. It's always a wonderful time of year. Now, obviously, we're winding down with the last couple of weeks here, right, for your 10 years as Attorney General. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a little sad, Jimmy. You know, every meeting I've gone to this month is the last one, whether it was the last claims board meeting, the last police officer standard and training board meeting. Yesterday was my last meeting with the district attorneys. And we had our Christmas party this week and had a huge group of employees show up to send me off, and I have a string of employees coming into my office every day and a few tears shed. So it's really sad, but 10 years is a long time. I'm going to miss the job. I just can't imagine a better job for a lawyer. But life moves on, and I'll move on.
Now, Cynthia Kaufman, been a deputy for you for many years now. She's going to be taking your place as successor. How are you thinking about that? I think she's going to be great in that post.
Well, and it's got a lot of advantages from my standpoint. Needless to say, there's not a lot of transition memos being written because Cynthia's been the number two in the office for 10 years. She knows every nook and cranny physically and, you know, in terms of the talent of the attorneys. And so it's going to be a very easy transition, has been so far, and I'm sure will continue to be over these last several weeks. And I think she'll do a great job. The office is in a very good place. We've got a great physical setting in the Carr building. We moved in there, I don't know, about a year and a half ago. We've actually 2 years ago now. We've got just outstanding legal staff. There's 450 employees in the office, 275 attorneys. Over the last many years, we've been attracting outstanding attorneys, so the expertise level is tremendous. So Cynthia is very fortunate. She's taken over an outstanding public law office.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, we do need people with experience at the helm, and she's definitely got that. I'm looking forward to seeing how she does as the next Attorney General of the State of Colorado. We are talking with John Southers, outgoing Attorney General for Colorado for the last 10 years here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. What are you going to miss most about this office?
I think the day-to-day interaction with so many smart people. My typical day when I'm in the office is a bunch of half-hour meetings that involve decisions that I, as the Attorney General, have to make. Very smart lawyers come in, present the issue, educate me about the issue. My job is to ask the most intelligent questions that I can to get to the root of, you know, what's the important facts, what's the law, and then reach the best decision that I can. And in the course of a day, you know, we're talking about water law, we're talking about public utilities law, we're talking about medicine and licensed doctors, we're talking about conservation easements, we're talking, you know, just a variety of, a wide variety of issues. And it's just a fascinating job. And I think I'm going to miss that day-to-day interaction with so many intelligent people about a whole variety of interesting issues.
Yeah, I mean, when you're leaving an office, and after 10 years, I can't imagine. Now, just refresh our audience. What happened in those first 2 years? Because obviously these posts are generally four-year terms.
Well, Ken Salazar was the prior Attorney General, and he got elected to the United States Senate in the November 2004 election. He had two more years to go. Governor Owens was tasked with appointing a new attorney general to be approved by the state Senate, which at that time was controlled by the Democrats. And I was the United States attorney, had been for the last 4 years, having been appointed by President George W. Bush. And Governor Owens, who I had previously worked for as head of the Department of Corrections, asked me to take the job of attorney general with the understanding that I would run for election in 2006. And I did, and I was approved by the state Senate and served those 2 years and then was subsequently elected in 2006 and 2010.
All right. Once again, we are talking with Attorney General John Southers, who, before we get to some of the issues that he's had to face as Attorney General here in the state of Colorado, I want to stick to sort of a non-political playing field and take off that political hat myself. As you know, Attorney General Southers, and many of our listeners know, I took over as president of a nonprofit organization called the Liberty Day Institute in February of 2013 for our founder, somebody who's still heavily active in Liberty Day Institute. Back in 1996, we were founded to educate youth about the U.S. Constitution and Declaration of Independence. And Attorney General John Southers has been one of our strongest supporters, having spoken to several classes this past September, spoke at a rally we had at the Capitol, having been filmed as well in some of these presentations, providing letters of support, other things along those lines. And so I want to take a moment to publicly thank you for that support and also give you a second, Attorney General Southers, to talk about why you think it's so important to educate youth effectively about government.
Jimmy, one of the things I'm most concerned about is the civic education of our young people. Frankly, the most young people in America don't know much about the United States Constitution. It's our founding document. It so much flows from it. What our expectations as citizens ought to be, what our responsibilities as citizens are, and I just think we ought to do a lot better job of educating kids about it. So I took every opportunity that I could over the last 10 years to get into classrooms and talk to kids. And you know, it was interesting to me that regardless of what level I was, I mean, obviously it was easier to talk to a honors government high school class, but even when I was with a bunch of fourth graders and fifth graders, you know, talking about freedom of religion, talking about freedom of speech, impressing upon them the fact that this is not the way it is everywhere. There are countries in this world today that you can be executed for advocating a religion different than what that government wants you to advocate. There are countries today where you cannot speak freely. These are not rights to be taken for granted. And I found that even, you know, I felt like I could communicate pretty well with even the youngest kids about the importance of the United States Constitution. So I've really enjoyed every opportunity I've had to do that.
And it's always wonderful. I love going into classes as well, and it's a great experience when you can get people who are actually dealing with this hands-on on a day-to-day basis. So thank you very much for your support and your activism in that role, and I'm sure you'll continue it down the road in the future down in Colorado Springs in whatever ventures you take on.
I've always done it throughout my career, whether I was in the private sector or the public sector. I've always taken the opportunity to get into the schools. I just think it's very, very important.
We're back live on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, Newstalk 710 KNUS. I had to divide up. We had to divide up. Our crack team here of me and Dwayne had to divide up our interview with John Southers into multiple segments. And so we've got the next portion that we will play for you in the next segment, where we talk about what in his mind is the most important case that he's been involved in. It's a very interesting conversation that it brings up, which leads to another a whole other swath of discussions, because it ties in directly with a number of other issues that he faces today as Attorney General, that we face today as Coloradans, as Americans who are very concerned with the way in which government is reshaping itself on the political side of the equation. I want to take a quick moment, since I got the time here at the end of this first segment, to just follow up and piggyback on what John and I were talking about with regards to the Liberty Day Institute. Educates fifth graders about the U.S. Constitution, Declaration of Independence. Go to libertyday.org to learn more. Again, it's nonpartisan, nonpolitical, supported by Republicans like John Southers, Democrats like John Hickenlooper. In fact, we just got a letter from John Hickenlooper for Bill of Rights Day sent to our founder, Andy McKeon, Bill of Rights Day was this past Monday, the 15th, the day on which, and I believe it was 1791, the Bill of Rights was ratified. And then on Tuesday was also the anniversary of the original Boston Tea Party. So that's a fascinating development as well in American history. But educating kids about the Constitution, educating them about what it means to be American is so valuable and so essential, regardless of your political persuasions. In fact, liberty and the Constitution precede politics. We can debate and try to persuade all day long, but it's because of that Constitution, because of that freedom, because of that liberty and that opportunity that we're able to do it. And indeed, an eagle needs a left wing and a right wing to fly. So LibertyDay.org, if you're looking for a tax-deductible contribution to end your year with, go to LibertyDay.org and do it right there so that you can support liberty, support the cause of education of our youth. We'll be back with John Suthers talking about the most important case in his mind that he's dealt with as Attorney General. We'll be right back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Don't go anywhere. Talking with John Suthers, Attorney General for the state of Colorado, in his final few weeks as we gear up for Christmas and the new year. Cynthia Kaufman, for 10 years, his deputy, number two in that office, will be taking charge come the next month. And boy, oh boy, is time flying by. I can't believe that 10 years has gone by and we are moving forward with somebody new in that post. So we're talking sort of a reflective look at some of the things that have happened and gone on under the tenure of John Suthers as Attorney General. I want to ask you this question. What do you think is the most important case? I know you do a wide variety of things in the office, but what is the most important case that you think you've taken on in that position in the last 10 years, John Suthers, and why?
Well, let me give you three, and I'll try and rank them. Number one, I believe that the challenge to the Affordable Health Care Act was probably the most far-reaching case. Now, to the average citizen out there, their perception of things is that a group of state AGs challenged the Affordable Health Care Act and that the court on a 5-4 vote found it constitutional. Jimmy, it's a lot more complicated than that. Health care, is not my area of endeavor. This was not a case for me about health care. This was a case about federalism and the power of the federal government vis-a-vis the states. And we claim two things. Number one, that Congress could not use the Commerce Clause to force individual Americans to buy a particular product or service. You keep in mind, when Congress passed the Affordable Health Care Act and the individual mandate to buy insurance, they have to state an enumerated power on which they're relying on in Article 1, Section 8, and they cited the commerce power, which, of course, has been the basis of the, a tremendous expansion of federal power over the last 100 years. And we said, hey, wait a minute. The Commerce Clause allows the federal government to regulate interstate commerce that or economic activity that impacts interstate commerce. It doesn't give you the right to force people into commerce, to create economic activity. And importantly, the court said 5-4, you're right. You cannot use the Commerce Clause to force citizens to buy a product or service. The other thing we challenged was Medicaid expansion. The federal government said to the states, look, we've set up this huge Medicaid system that's costing billions and billions and billions of dollars. And even the state's 10% share is now the second major expense in state budgets after K-12 education. And guess what? We're going to have this huge expansion of it, and either you accept this expansion and the economic detriment to your state, or you lose all Medicaid coverage. We said, hey, wait a minute. That is essentially so coercive as to violate federalism. And while people had challenged, highway funding mandates and things like that in the past, and the court had always said, gee, this is not overly coercive, but someplace out there there's a line that's overly coercive. In our case, they said, 7-2, yes, this is overly coercive. The states will have a choice whether or not they participate. So on our two claims for relief, we won on both of them. And what was lost in the process was because the court said 5-4 that even though Congress said this wasn't a tax, it was in fact a tax, even though because they said it wasn't a tax, the Anti-Injunction Act didn't apply. Therefore, we didn't have to wait until the tax was imposed in the end of 2014, which was a very, very curious result. But I honestly believe, Jimmy, in the future, if they try and impose a duty to buy a particular product on the basis of a tax, it's not going to pass because people understand taxes. And cutting off the Commerce Clause as an avenue to force people to buy a particular product or service, I think will prove to be huge. So I think it was ultimately a victory for federalism. We'll see. I just can't believe that at some point in time they're getting to get away with saying, gee, buy broccoli or we're going to tax you. So,
I want to jump in there because it's a very interesting question about federalism and the direction that we're headed. I know in my studies of former Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist, he really did a lot to try to bring back a resurgence of federalism. Under Barack Obama, though, we've seen a lot of indications that maybe federalism has been on decline. We see it with Common Core, for example, when it comes to education. George W. Bush certainly was involved when it came to education. We've got other things as well in terms of administration policies that are tied to Obamacare, not tied to Obamacare. You just addressed some of the positives and I think also some negatives with regards to the Obamacare decision as it relates to federalism and the taxing issues and so forth. Where do you think federalism is headed at this point in our nation's history, John Southers?
I think federalism took a couple steps back over the last couple of years. I agree with you. We had a couple decisions out of the Rehnquist Court in the last several years. If you remember, they struck down some, I think, some drug-free zones and things like that, said these are not federal issues. It's waning. Once again, back to the civic education issue I was talking about, if you ask the average American, hey, what about federalism? They just kind of look at you with a blank look on their face.
Right.
They don't understand that the founders, you know, put this in the United States Constitution and said, look, federal government, you've got only these powers that we have specifically listed in Article 1, Section 8, and if it's not in there, you don't have that power.
All right, we're going to take a quick break now here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. When we come back, more of our retrospective look with Attorney General John Southers. We've got a few other cases, including gay marriage and masterpiece cakes, up next. You do not want to miss this and so much more. 710.
Sleigh bells in the snow.
You know, I'm not a big fan of snow, but I really do love a white Christmas, and I'm hoping for one. I'm dreaming for one. I'm dreaming of one. This coming Thursday, Merry Christmas to you all, and may it be a white Christmas, and may all your Christmases be white. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, 303-696-1971. The telephone number to be a part of the program. If you have any side comments you want to give to Dwayne, you're welcome to. But at the bottom of the next hour, if you have any comments that you want to give on my John Southers interview or any other topics that we've been discussing, feel free to give us a call. And 24/7, 365, you can email me at jimmy@sangcenter.com. That's Sang with an E, not an A. jimmy@sangcenter.com. Let's continue now with our interview, a farewell interview with outgoing Colorado Attorney General John Southers.
And I think after 100 years of relatively broad use of the commerce power, most Americans think the federal government can do anything it darn wants to do. So I think federalism's on a weak thread in the minds of our citizens, let alone in reality. And I don't think it's dead in the minds of a couple of our Supreme Court justices. And so let's hope that we can get, before we start appointing some new ones, we can get to a president who has a better understanding of federalism.
We're talking to Attorney General John Southers, who is in his final waning weeks in that position, and then he's going to rev up a campaign, which we'll talk about in a little bit here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, for mayor of Colorado Springs. On this issue of federalism, we've seen something that has really disturbed a great many of us who care about the idea of states' rights or the idea that states are able to make their own decisions when it comes to gay marriage, where we have seen recent decisions in the courts of appeals and district courts and all sorts of different matters related to gay marriage. We're now here in the state of Colorado as a result of court decisions. Gay marriage is effectively legal in this state. I want to give you a minute to talk about sort of your thoughts on how this really is coming about and whether or not that is an example of the erosion of federalism, and also why your office decided not to fight back against that at a certain point.
Oh, we defended the Colorado law as far as we possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
Just to refresh your recollection, the voters in Colorado in
2006
voted to make marriage between a man and a woman, put it in the state constitution. We've had a series of two things have happened. On the political front, several states have politically adopted same-sex marriage. And then we started to have a series of decisions in which courts said essentially that a ban on gay marriage was a violation of the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Guarantee. And the essence of the argument became, is this some sort of inherent right to marry, or do the states get to define, for example, in Colorado, we say you have to be a certain age, we say you have to not be in certain relations, you know, can't be first cousin and all that sort of thing. Do the states get to define it, or does the federal government? And, of course, the 14th Amendment says a state can't deprive people of equal protection without due process of law. And courts began to say, yes, that's true. This is a equal protection issue. There's no compelling state interest in limiting it to a man and a woman and aren't buying arguments about reproduction and things like that. So that began to happen, and in a case out of Utah that went to the 10th Circuit, the 10th Circuit upheld 2-1 that the Utah law, which is identical to Colorado, was unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment. And so that would apply to Colorado and all the other states in the 10th Circuit with Utah. However, the court stayed the order and said, pending appeal to the United States Supreme Court. If the court takes the case, then their resolution will be effective, or if they deny cert, then our decision will be effective. And, of course, what happened in Colorado was we had a couple of clerks who, they liked the first part of the order that said that the ban on gay marriage was unconstitutional. I just didn't like the second part of it that said that there was a stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to court to try and prevent them from issuing same-sex marriage licenses. And it turned into a little bit of a circus because I had a Boulder district court judge rule that, these licenses are probably illegal, but I find that either the married couples, the same-sex couples getting these licenses, or the state of Colorado is not harmed by the issuance of these licenses. And we said, hey, wait a minute, and went to the Colorado Supreme Court, and finally the court told these clerks not to issue, Denver and Boulder, not to issue any same-sex marriage licenses pending this appeal. But then in what was at that time somewhat of a surprising situation, the United States Supreme Court declined to take certiorari of either the 10th Circuit case or several other circuit decisions that had struck down bans on gay marriage. And so overnight, with that decision, gay marriage became the law in Colorado. There was nothing else to appeal, Jimmy. And so we instructed the clerks and recorders that that's what they needed to do. And then, curiously, since that point in time, a circuit court, the first circuit court, that came out and ruled in favor of a ban on gay marriage. So now for the first time we have what's called split circuits, which in our opinion heightens the likelihood that the Supreme Court will take it, because otherwise then you have, you know, different laws in different states based on court decision as opposed to political decisions of legislatures. And that is now pending before the court, and my guess is they'll probably take cert. I think we may also see another Southern Circuit do what the Sixth Circuit did and say that a ban is constitutional. So the interesting situation in Colorado is that while gay marriage is the law right now, if the court took the case and decided differently, then upon that decision, our constitutional amendment would kick back in, and the only thing that could overturn it would be a political decision. Although the vast majority of people that have kind of weighed what has transpired in the courts up to this point in time look to a case called Windsor, which was on whether or not the federal government could deny federal benefits to couples that were legally married in states that recognized same-sex marriage, and the court said 5-4, you cannot. And the language of Kennedy in that leads people to believe that Kennedy's on board to strike down bans on gay marriage, and there will be a 5-4 decision. That's not a slam dunk, because Kennedy is a pretty good federalist and understands that there's a difference between saying that if the state says you're married, far be it from the federal government to say you're not. That's different than saying the federal government says you have to recognize these marriages. So
definitely,
that's the issue at this point.
Well, thank you very much for giving that explanation. I think it's an important one for everybody to understand more coherently the issues involved. Attorney General John Southers here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Another case where you had taken up that, well, it made so many of us upset in the sense that we had this cake shop, Masterpiece Cakes, which didn't want to make a cake for a gay couple for their wedding. And, of course, they were taken to court and essentially ordered, I think it was an administrative court, right, where they were
right.
They were ordered to go ahead and make
it's moved
that cake.
To district court now. But an administrative court. We have a law in Colorado, our public accommodations law. And a couple years ago when Democrats were in charge of both houses, they inserted sexual orientation along with race and gender as protective classes. And so in Colorado, essentially, sexual orientation has the same protection as race in terms of our anti-public discrimination law. So if you have a business, whether it be motel business, restaurant business, cake shop, hold yourself out to the public, you must abide by this public accommodations law. And in this case, it's alleged that a gay couple who'd been married in another state wanted to have a celebration in Colorado, went into this cake shop, was very frank with the owner about what they want to do, and he refused to make them a cake, despite the fact they probably could have walked a block and gotten the cake at another bake store. They complained to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The Civil Rights Commission voted to direct the Attorney General to bring a case under the public accommodations law, and it does appear this individual violated the Colorado public accommodations law, so the case was brought. And so while one side of the political spectrum was yelling and screaming at me about the same-sex marriage case, the other side was yelling and screaming at me about this. And in both instances, I was trying to pull Colorado law.
Well, but what about the role of this argument that was made at the time, and I think is a very compelling one in a variety of issues, in a variety of ways as well, and that is that we're talking about the First Amendment freedom of religion, and if gay activities are in someone's religious belief against in violation of that, and they want to run their business in accordance with their religious views, do they not have legal protection?
Only if the activity is part of the practice of religion, and that therein lies the problem, Jimmy. The reason why I think the state's going to win this case throughout is that baking cakes is not the exercise of religion. If you told the Catholic Church they had to marry gay couples, then you're violating the First Amendment. Mm. It's complicated. There's a long line of cases about it, but sadly enough, I think the state's probably going to win this case. As you know, New Mexico, very similar case about photography, wedding
right.
Photography, went to the state Supreme Court. They upheld the Civil Rights Commission claim against the photographers, and the United States Supreme Court denied cert. I think that's going to happen here. And I would urge everybody to look at the legislature and the public policy that is involved here. I think what's different, Jimmy, than 1964 at the time of the civil rights cases is if a black went into a restaurant in the South in 1963 and was refused service, he couldn't walk into a restaurant next door and get service for the most part. Everybody refused service. That's not the atmosphere we have today.
Right.
We have this guy who, as a matter of his religious, would prefer not to do that, but we have plenty of guys down the street that are perfectly willing to do it. I just don't think it's the same atmosphere, and I think the legislature ought to be sensitive to that fact. But the Colorado legislature, at least the majority at certain points in time, has not been. It's been very frustrating to me because when, as you know, a couple years ago, after civil unions failed by one vote, certain people spent a lot of money to make sure that the Democrats took over the legislature with comfortable enough margins that it would pass. And all previous versions that had been tendered had a religious exemption in them.
Right,
when they
absolutely.
When they knew they had the numbers, they took out the religious exemption. I went over, not as the attorney general, but as a kid who was born out of wedlock and had been adopted through Catholic charities, and said, hey, look, this organization's been around for over 100 years adopting kids. Do you really want to tell the Catholic Church that they're out of the adoption business because they insist on adopting to marriages with a man and a woman? And basically their attitude was, yeah, that's what we want to do. I just think that's sad.
I do as well, and I'd love to talk at length with you more, John Southers, outgoing Attorney General for the state of Colorado, about this particular case, but there are several other topics I want to hit before we have to let you go. And we are back live now on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. I hope you're enjoying this fascinating conversation with outgoing Attorney General John Southers. Very interesting. I really enjoyed before talking about federalism. But when we come back here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, we talk specifically about the gun laws. Of course, I and many others believe firmly that the gun laws that were passed in the legislative session in 2013 were reprehensible and unconstitutional. John Southers, however, and his office defended them in court as he believes to be appropriate. Why is that? We have some answers on the other side of the break, right here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. And then in just a little bit, we will also talk with John Southers about the story of how the Republican Attorneys General Association funneled money through the Republican Governors Association against Tom Tancredo. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We got a lot more ahead. Run, run, Rudolph. We're running back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Merry Christmas, one and all. Let's continue with our KNUS radio exclusive. Sit down with outgoing Attorney General for Colorado, John Southers. Another one is the gun issues, because obviously we've seen these gun laws that were passed in the legislative session a couple of sessions ago. We saw what happened in So we saw these gun laws get put into effect here in the state of Colorado that in the minds of many, myself included, are in violation of the U.S. Constitution. And there have been court cases and so forth that have been going on challenging this. And there have been a lot of complaints that your office has not been standing up for the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, in light of the way things have gone in terms of the legal proceedings and in terms of implementation of these laws and so forth. How do you respond to that?
I respond that we have been at the forefront of protecting the Second Amendment. Let me explain. We had gone essentially 100 years in this country without a Second Amendment decision by the Supreme Court. In the last several years, we've had two blockbuster Second Amendment decisions. The first was a case out of Washington, D.C., where D.C. had basically banned possession of handguns in homes for purposes of self-defense. And the issue before the court was, is the Second Amendment an individual right that each American has, or is it a collective right, you know, dependent upon the existence of a militia and because of some of the language in the Second Amendment? And while Second Amendment advocates, that's a pretty clear question to them, it wound up being a 5-4 decision saying that it was an individual right. My office was at the forefront of the advocacy that this was, in fact, a individual right. Well, that was Washington, D.C., which is federal territory. So the next case came out of Chicago, and the issue was, okay, does this Second Amendment individual right to bear arms apply to state and local governments, or is it just a federal right? And once again, most Americans are going to say, oh, of course it's a federal right. It's in the United States Constitution. But they have to consider the fact that until 1960, the law was that all the Bill of Rights were only applied to the federal government and did not apply to state and local governments. And only beginning, actually, I think in about 1959, in a First Amendment case called Gitlow, did the U.S. Supreme Court begin to say, look, while Bill of Rights weren't directed to the state and federal governments, the 14th Amendment is. It says no state shall deprive a person of life, liberty, property without due process of law. And beginning in about 1959, the court began to incorporate certain of the rights in the Bill of Rights and say these are so fundamental that they're part of due process and a state can't deprive you of that. And gradually over time, a lot of the Bill of Rights, not all of it, but a lot of it has been incorporated into the 14th Amendment, made applicable to the states. So the issue in the case was, is the Second Amendment essential to due process that it applies to state and local governments under the 14th Amendment? My office was at the forefront of arguing in the Supreme Court that it was, and that was the decision, 5-4.
Well, when you say at the forefront, what do you mean?
We sponsored a brief, an amicus brief, and gathered a bunch of states to advocate for that position. I mean, we were very much a part of the argument. But then what we have in Colorado is the Colorado legislature passing a couple of questionable bills, were one where they limit the amount of rounds in a clip to 30, and another what they call a universal background check. And while you and other Second Amendment advocates will say, oh, gee, that's obviously a constitutional violation, it's not quite so obvious, and here's why. In the course of these two cases, the courts basically enunciated two major parameters. Number one, individuals have the right to bear arms and to bear weapons reasonably necessary to accomplish lawful tasks, self-defense, hunting, things like that. Number two, the state can place limitations on who's eligible based on mental health, criminal backgrounds, things like that. And second, the state can put some limit on the firepower. Everybody's not entitled to their own surface-to-air missile and things like that. And those are the broad parameters.
Very interesting discussion that we'll pick up on the other side of the break on the gun rights issue. Why did John Southers decide to defend? Gets a little testy. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. To be a Coloradan. We've been playing our interview recorded earlier this afternoon with Attorney General John Southers, outgoing, soon to be replaced by his deputy of 10 years, Cynthia Kaufman. And I wanted to do an extensive interview with him to touch on a number of different issues, particularly because we just don't hear these discussed so often. We don't really hear a debrief of somebody who's leaving office discussing some highlights and some controversial aspects to their tenure in office. And so we've been talking about these gun bills, and I want to tee up now a continuation of this discussion, where now we lead into the argument that many have said, well, if one can contend that these gun bills. These gun laws are unconstitutional, as I and many others in Colorado believe, despite the Heller decision by the Supreme Court, which we heard discussed. That's the Chicago decision that we heard discussed in the last segment by John Southers. The gun laws, we could say, are unconstitutional. We make that argument. And so does the Attorney General not have the ability, and should he not consider, or she not consider, possibly not defending a law of this nature? Let's continue now with our interview with outgoing Attorney General John Southers.
And so as these cases go forward, and by the way, Colorado's case is way behind others. You know, California's had a 10-round limit for years. I think New York has a 7-round limit, and I think those cases will probably work their way to the court before ours does, because ours is just now out of the trial court and onto the 10th Circuit. But the question is going to be, okay, you know, what is reasonably necessary to defend yourself, to hunt, things like that, and what is a reasonable limitation on the firepower? Second Amendment advocates will advocate, properly so, that this ought to be somewhat of a subjective test. I get to decide what I need for purposes of self-defense. But I think so far the trial courts are leaning towards the fact that there's some objectivity to it. Experts can say, hey, look, I've examined all these situations, and 30 rounds is generally adequate for purposes of self-defense. And so is this a meaningful, an appropriate limitation or not? So I would just suggest to you, based on these broad parameters that have been set forth, it's not a slam dunk that the United States Supreme Court is going to say, you know, you can't limit the 30 rounds. Not legislation I would have voted for. My experience is that these things really don't make much difference. But despite that, that was the law of Colorado. There was no on-point precedent saying it's unconstitutional.
Well, and I want to jump in real quick, since we're limited on time with you here, outgoing Attorney General John Southers. Now, on this particular issue, when we were talking a few months back with Cynthia Kaufman about this very topic and the fact that the state sheriffs went essentially up against the state and your office representing, of course, the state and defending these laws. My understanding is now that you technically could have had the choice as Attorney General not to take this case, and instead, if the governor wanted to defend it, to have him hire on a counsel, general counsel,
why,
or somebody to represent
that. Well, it's my job to defend.
And that's what I wanted to ask you, is what
Absolutely.
Is your position?
Yeah, how I feel about a particular law is irrelevant. That's where Mr. Quick got in trouble, quite frankly, is running for Attorney General and say, gee, if I get elected, I'm not going to defend the state's ban on same-sex marriage. No, you don't get to pick and choose. I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post, very critical of Eric Holder, you know, saying to state AGs, if you think it's unconstitutional, you don't have to defend it. No, you defend it until a court with the highest jurisdiction over the issue tells you it's unconstitutional. And I feel very strongly about that, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very slippery slope when attorney generals start deciding for themselves what they're going to defend and not.
And so you're saying you got to hold strong to this particular standard of it's the law as it is, and
exactly
you
right.
have to enforce
unless,
it that way.
Unless there's a case telling you that it's unconstitutional, then you defend it until the court tells you otherwise.
Yeah, and as I said, Cynthia Kaufman, very similar in terms of her position and way of articulating that view. A few more questions for you before we let you go, Attorney General.
I didn't tell you the other cases.
Oh, yes, let's go back.
Okay, Lobato was huge.
Yes.
That was a challenge to the K-12 school financing thing. Had we lost that case, I think, potentially could have the plaintiffs wanted the state to spend another $3 billion, to basically double K-12 spending from $3 billion to $6 billion and take up, 90% of general fund expenditures by the state, we'd be out of the prison business, we'd be out of the higher education business, we'd be out of everything else. That was a big victory. And a lot of states haven't won that case, so I felt very good about that. I think the final case that I felt very good about was I was the lead negotiator in a case in which 49 AGs settled with the five largest banks for their misconduct in mortgage loan servicing, and it was a $25 billion settlement, and most of that money came back in terms of relief to people who had been the victim of that servicing misconduct. So I felt very good about that.
Oh, the Lobato's decision, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because that one was so instrumental in basically affirming there are stopgaps to how far government can go when it comes to spending, including on issues like education. I mean, Tabor and related issues are very important to me. And that's where I want to ask you real quick about the status of Tabor litigation, because I know that it's being challenged in federal court, right? Is that's still going on, I believe, correct?
Yeah. We're in a procedural skirmish that has made its way all the way to the United States Supreme Court. A group of legislators and former legislators, 33 of them, 31 Democrats, 2 Republicans, have challenged the constitutionality of Tabor under Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, which is the guarantee clause, something very few people ever pay any attention to.
Right.
There's a clause in the Constitution that says the United States guarantees to every state a Republican form of government. Jimmy, the reason why the founders put that in there is they were worried about lingering monarchical tendencies in the colonies. Remember that only about a third of the colonists favored the revolution, about a third opposed it, and a third didn't give a darn. Some things haven't changed in America. And so, you know, they were worried that, gosh, maybe somebody will try and make Thomas Jefferson the king of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we don't want that. Well, fast forward couple hundred years, and we've got this group of creative people saying, gee, a Republican form of government means that the legislature needs to make all the important decisions, and the people can't have power over the purse strings. Only the legislature in a Republican form of government can decide, you know, appropriations. And therefore, the citizens of Colorado are being deprived of their right to have the legislature decide it, and it's a violation of their constitutional rights to let them to decide whether or not taxes are raised. That's pretty an amazing proposition to me. But most importantly, the United States Supreme Court has never recognized standing in a guarantee clause case. Several people have challenged the initiative process. 1912 in Oregon, there's a case where they said that the initiative process giving power to the people to vote on things was a violation of the guarantee clause. The court said, no, this is a political question. We're not even going to take the case. And so they've never found standing, and we don't think they should find standing here. But the plaintiffs have been very, very fortunate in the judicial lottery. They drew a trial court judge who had just got appointed by President Obama, and he found that they did have standing. The 10th Circuit found 2-1 that there was standing, and the en banc panel found 6-4 that there was standing. So we have gone to the United States Supreme Court with a cert petition asking them to take up the issue just on whether they're standing. We don't think we ought to have a 3-year trial about this issue, which is what will happen if they find standing. And that's pending before the Supreme Court right now. Briefs are in, and I would imagine they decide it in the next month. And I think there's a very good chance they're going to take it, because you know, the notion that it violates your constitutional rights to allow you to vote on whether or not to raise taxes, I just find
it's a pretzel.
Pretty far-fetched.
It absolutely turns itself into a legal pretzel, in my view. We're speaking without going Attorney General John Southern. And we're going to take another break in just a moment here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show and come back with the discussion, closing off on two political issues. One is how the Republican Attorneys General Association funneled money to the Republican Governors Association, which then directed that money to an organization which, by the way, has ties to Mitt Romney in Massachusetts, called the Campaign for Jobs and Opportunity, which then distributed money to different groups in Colorado against Tom Tancredo in the Republican gubernatorial primary. Did you follow all of that? Well, if it's the Republican Attorneys General Association, what does John Southers have to say about this? We talked to him about that briefly, along with why he's running for mayor of Colorado Springs, jumping from Attorney General of Colorado to the mayoral position. And I want to say also, this whole notion of Tabor and trying to trash on Tabor and our ability to vote on whether or not taxes may go up is absurd. As I said, it's a pretzel legal decision because you have to jumble all sorts of things together to come up with some sort of a legal conclusion that it's unconstitutional for the people to be able to have a say in whether or not their taxes should go up when you still do have a representative form of government, a Republican form of government. But that is the left for you. We'll be right back in the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Get ready if you want to chime in your thoughts in the interview. 303-696-1971 is the telephone number to connect you with the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Merry Christmas from News Talk 710.
With our Colorado Radio farewell exclusive interview with outgoing Attorney General John Southers, where we talk about two things: the Republican Attorneys General Association's role in our gubernatorial primary this last cycle, and his run for mayor of Colorado Springs. I want to get to a couple of political things with you real quick before we let you go. First, you know, when we saw the gun bills making their way through, we saw outside money from back east come into the state in the form of Mayor Michael Bloomberg backing Democrats and saying, hey, go ahead and ram these gun bills through. And there was a big blowback about that from people both on the right and somewhat on the left who were concerned. Well, I've been noticing, I've got some friends who've been pushing me on this topic, and I wanted to ask you about it, and that there was something that they feel it was similarly done during the gubernatorial primary, where the Republican Attorney General's Association spent $175,000 that was given to the Republican Governors Association, and money then passed on to another group. I think it was the Campaign for Jobs and Opportunity, which was then dispersed and used in advertisements against Tom Tancredo in his bid for governor. I don't know how much you've been asked about this or paying attention since you've been on the executive committee for the Republican Attorneys General Association, but I'm wondering if you might comment on that.
I'll sure comment, because I'm understanding that on your program, Mr. Tancredo accused me of having knowledge of that, and I did have no knowledge whatsoever of it. I don't know how it happened. It looks to, if in fact that's what happened, and it seems that it does. I do think, unfortunately, some of these organizations are used for conduits, and it appears maybe the governors came to the Republican AGs. I will tell you, it did not go through the executive committee as a whole.
Okay.
Whether a individual, the chairman, sanctioned it or not, I don't know. And to this day, I don't know, and have never had that clarified. I do not know what happened.
Do you know how that kind of those kinds of monies are spent and allocated in an organization like the RAGA?
Typically, yes, they're spent on Republican AG races. But why anybody in the RAGA would have acted as a conduit for money for the Republican governors? That's unprecedented, I don't know how it happened or why it happened.
On the surface, without knowing answers to some of those questions, do you think that that's something appropriate to have been done?
No, I don't. I think that AGs ought to stick to AGs races. Governors ought to stick to governors races. And that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that and appreciate you answering those questions. All right, we got to run, so I want to ask you, why are you running for mayor of Colorado Springs as your next step following 10 years as Attorney General for Colorado?
Yeah, great question, Jimmy. I'm fortunate at this stage of my life to have a lot of opportunities. I can walk into a very lucrative private law practice, but I've lived in Colorado Springs all my life. I love the city. You know, I literally grew up with the city. I've watched it grow from 40,000 to 440,000 people, the 41st largest city in America. A lot of people don't realize that. It's bigger than Cleveland, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Minneapolis. But Colorado Springs has some issues. Over the last 15 years, it has lagged behind the rest of the state of Colorado in new job creation. It has about a $1.3 billion infrastructure backlog. And if you followed things over the last 4 years, we've had a political environment down here that's not conducive to economic development and community development. The mayor and the we went to a new strong mayor system 4 years ago, and it's just been a total war between the mayor and the council. And I think that we need somebody with some collaborative leadership skills to change that political environment. Convince the voters to invest in some infrastructure and aggressively pursue job growth. And a lot of people talked to me about it, and I agreed to take a shot at it. So that election's April 7th. So I'll either be the mayor of Colorado Springs or happily ensconced in private practice. But it's a tough task, but I'm willing to take it on because I love the city and. I think I've got the leadership, I've got the knowledge, the experience, the relationships, local, state, national relationships that could help move the city forward.
All right. Well, Attorney General John Southers, it'll be a very interesting race to watch, that's for sure. Thank you very much. Regardless of whether or not you agree or disagree with certain decisions or things that Mr. Southers has made, we do appreciate your service over the last 10 years and your time joining us this evening here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate the opportunity.
And that is it. I know that went long, but again, I think it's very valuable to hear from somebody who for 10 years, has been serving our state as the Attorney General and to address some of the key issues. We heard Attorney General John Southers say that Obamacare was the most important case he'd been involved in, as well as the Lobato case dealing with funding for education. We heard him discuss and make provide an explanation for his positions and actions on gay marriage, on the gun bills, and on the Masterpiece Cake case, and a number of other issues. Very fascinating. Your calls up next, 303-696-1971, if you want to chime in. Plus, I got some more things to tell you before we end the show. Don't go anywhere.